You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. This is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports.
And I'm Joseph Silverswag.
How's everybody doing?
So first, I'm just going to start off apologizing for the audio quality in our mobile studio last time. I mean, obviously, it wasn't the ideal conditions. We're hopefully going to have some better audio today. And if it's still a major issue, please let us know. So I'll put that behind us. Let's get into the quick hitters. And as always, we're going to start with Kyle Kuzma and the Kuzma Watch. So it's interesting. Pulling up his game log, he had, you know, a really rough game against the Pacers, had a day off, played against the Knicks, only played 10 minutes, so in essence had another day off, and then he lit up the Celtics in the fourth quarter specifically, scoring 17 points in the fourth quarter, and Twitter was going crazy, especially when he schooled Marcus Smart, excuse me, through the pass behind the back for a Larry Nance Jr. dunk, I believe it was.
I'm gonna find that and I'm gonna retweet it, and you guys just find it if you haven't seen it yet. It's amazing. Amazing. Just really great. He's really great, and he's having a great season. I'm having a lot of fun watching him.
I mean, when the supposed rookie sensation Ball tweets out Kuzmania, it's pretty much him. I feel like he's recognizing that the true best rookie on that team.
Oh, and he's got like this spin move, and he does all the, it's so good. It's so good. Yeah, and I think everybody who's actually paying attention to this developing sort of friendly competition between these two rookies is Kuzma's way ahead right now. Although Ball's contributions in terms of ball control and assists and things like that have been really impressive, he's not scoring the way Kuzma is making the highlight reel the same way. So,
yeah. So Kuz continues to be great in the NBA. It's funny to hear the media ask Chris Goviak almost every other week or so, did you know this? How are you surprised? Yada, yada, yada.
Like, I just wish he hadn't left for the draft. We'd be in first place.
Well, I mean, they get the same answer almost every time. Larry K says, you know, hey, it seems like that extension of the three-point line works better with a shot, and he's just overall better for the NBA game. So, whatever.
And
good
again,
job, Kuz.
Credit to Kuzma for saying to himself, I think the extension of the three-point line is going to be really good for my game, and I'm going to be a much better NBA player than I ever will be a college player, so I'm just going to go. And yeah, he was absolutely right, and a lot of pundits and observers were absolutely wrong.
Yep. I'm happy to be wrong. It's fine.
Gymnastics.
They
did good.
So they put up their highest score of the season against Oregon State, and I actually, being there, felt like it wasn't one of their best meets, so I feel like there's more to come. They are, the Red Rocks are the number one team on the floor, so that's pretty cool.
Michaela Skinner's, like, star event?
That's her top event, and ultimately, everyone's doing really well with that. They play Arizona this week, tonight, actually, so we'll see what happens. They're at Arizona. I'm not expecting anything but a win, honestly. But
the only team in the Pac-12 that really gives them a run for their money night in, night out would be UCLA this year. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
Although the Pac-12 is a very good league and deep, and the scores are close enough and the margins tight enough that, you know, one stumble or a bad event from somebody and you got it yourself a match. But yeah. Utah's ranked third in the nation right now behind LSU and Oklahoma. And I count 1, 2, 3, 4 top 20 women's gymnastics teams from the Pac-12, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Give it some time, and I imagine there might be more up there. So, along with other sports, women's basketball plays Oregon State.
Tori Williams. Got to talk about Tori.
Yes, we'll talk. We'll mention Tori.
Sorry, I'm so excited about Tori.
You have a crush on Tori. It's okay. Crush
away. I like Tori. I have a professional admiration for her basketball skills.
Okay. That's what you call it?
That's exactly what I call it. That's what it is.
It's the equivalent of what I would call a man crush is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's in the same way that I have a crush on Kyle Kuzma, I have a crush on Tori Wheeler.
All right, well, she won Freshman of the Week last week when they swept the Arizona schools at Arizona State and Arizona on the road. So that's awesome.
Lots and now of wins playing on the road in Arizona lately.
Yeah, we'll talk about another one later. But now they play Oregon State, number 17. I believe tonight is the pink out. So if you wear pink, you're getting in free. They're giving away a few hundred free T-shirts to the four. I think it's the first 400 fans that are there. So if you want to go cheer on the Lady Running Utes, by all means, get out there and wear your pink. And then they play number 7 Oregon later this weekend. So big games for women's basketball coming up. I mean, along the lines of other week awards in basketball, Bivens got Pac-12 Player of the Week last week. So that's a nice quick hitter right there. Bivens playing great. We'll talk about him later with the basketball program, of course. And then, I mean, we got to do our Deseret Duel mention of a rivalry.
We got to contact them and see if we can pick up any of those sponsorship dollars.
One of those sponsorship things.
Get a better mobile studio.
Yeah, maybe a mobile studio. So, swimming and diving's taking on BYU this weekend. So
we're
going to
win.
See.
We're going to crush them.
As always.
In everything.
So, I'm curious, Joseph, this next quick hitter, I feel it might take a few minutes, but everything I've seen is season tickets for football went up at least 30% in price.
Up and up and up every year.
What do you think?
Pac-12 football costs more. And you want to win more games. You want to have better players. And that means you need more coaches and higher salaries and better facilities. And that stuff costs money. And, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of that stuff they're not getting from ticket sales.
That's true. I think that's true. And I think that you'll still see that Utah tickets are a lower price than other premier Pac-12 programs. But I think that their ability to raise ticket prices, I understand if you're a season ticket holder, you feel really crappy about it because it's a lot of money. But I think it demonstrates kind of the business savvy of that end of the program, because they keep saying, look, we don't want a huge stadium. We think that this is the way to go. And they're selling out every single game. And it's really exciting. And the atmosphere is among the best in college athletics. And what they're doing is working. And my guess is that after the new stadium comes in, prices will rise again to kind of reflect the new digs and all of that. But then it'll probably stabilize over the next 5-6 years a little bit. They'll always go up. Inflation is a thing and everything goes up every year. But
so to some extent, I agree. But the thing is history doesn't come out. Like I saw someone who's had season tickets for a while, and the increases have come to when there's 7 home games, and then the next year they hold flat, and then they go up with the next 7 home games. This year is not a 7 home game season, and they went up. I mean, my problem with the tickets is I was in the MUS, had season tickets to the MUS all through college. I graduated in 2011 and never had hope of getting football season tickets. Like, I can put myself on the wait list, but until I donate thousands of dollars, I'm not getting tickets. And then I pay the ticket price. So that's kind of my problem with it. And yeah, but I guess I also get, you know, basic economics, right? Supply and demand. There's at least they're reporting sellouts every game. So obviously demand is high and you keep raising that price until you get it to the right amount to where you're selling out. But if you raised it another $5, you're not selling out anymore. Right. So it's a matter of give and take. And until
but that's
there's
small
no
consolation
demand.
Consolation for fans who
just want to. Yeah. But I mean, fans want to go. Ultimately, guess what? I pay for my satellite TV, and I have my nice TV, and it's HD, and I have a really comfy couch inside a home that's heated. So when everyone's at a cold game in the snow, with the bad signal not being able to tweet about the game and whatnot, I'm sitting on my comfortable couch watching the game. And that was the decision I made, is I knew I could afford satellite TV. I'm choosing not to afford season tickets.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and I think a lot of fans are making that decision, and all they need is, like you said, just enough fans. Exactly, yeah. As many so fans as there are seats, and ideally there isn't a single person out there who can afford tickets, wants to buy tickets, but can't get in. And they have to keep raising prices until they get there, as a matter of just the business side of things, which is crummy for fans. I think that's just true. But the debt service on their new stadium that they're going to be putting in, it's going to be substantial. It's going to be a big hit on the budget. And they're probably looking to build that up and just kind of lay the groundwork for that. And then hopefully the increase in seats will be able to drive the ticket price down or keep the ticket price from going up, and that they'll start getting more revenue from, like, they're putting in a restaurant complex and a couple other things that'll hopefully bring revenue in other ways. So you can start bringing your kids to the game, which is what I'm sad about it. What's hard for me about the price of tickets is I wish there was a way for me to bring my little kids to the game, even though they're not going to pay attention and just kind of.
Well, I mean, that's how they grow up as fans, yeah. Right? They need to be part of it. I mean, the problem my kids don't get to watch.
$190 to bring my 4-year-old to a game. You know, it's just crazy because she's going to be bored and want to leave. And, you know, daddy, can I have some cotton candy and then see you later? So what's the point?
I mean, ultimately, the problem for me, I mean, my kids, I'm obviously raising the right people. They're going to be Utah fans. But the game, so many games are so late that I wouldn't take them to a game even if I bought tickets and had the money, because it's way too late for them to be up watching a football game. I don't want to deal with, one, they're probably going to want to fall asleep at the game. Two, they're going to fall asleep on my lap on the tracks train or fall asleep in the car. Like, it's just, like, I don't want to deal with all that. And then they're going to be a freaking monster the next day
because
they ain't getting enough sleep.
The day after, if you guys don't have kids, the day after you do something fun with your kids.
And past bedtime.
I mean, it's just a nightmare every single time. And when you're deciding, oh, well, do I want to go to this movie or go do this thing? You have to price in the fact that your kid is going to be punching you in the eye and pulling out your hair for the next 24 hours. So if you haven't had kids yet, get ready. Because it's fun. It's exciting. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't want to talk too much about the time because I think that goes back to what we talked about last week,
Pac-12.
Which is Pac-12 management and contracts and stuff like that. And so our opinion hasn't changed since 7 days ago.
I'm intrigued. So our deals, the Pac-12 deals right now, are with ESPN and Fox and the Pac-12 Network. I wonder if the Pac-12 would consider going to a lower network, like a NBC Sports or a CBS Sports, to own the primetime slot at, like, you know, 4:00.
Well, this is what they need to do, is at least be evaluating
these things.
And I would like to think that they are, but based on what I'm seeing, the results of their contracts,
it suggests
that they're not doing the due diligence that gives them the leverage that they need. Because what you actually do is you go to NBC and you say, I want the 4:00 prime slot. And they say, okay, here's how much we'll pay you. And you say, great. And then you go back to Fox or back to ESPN and you say, look, here's what NBC Sports is going to do for us. You say, all right, we'll take the NAS trucks off and we'll do this and we'll start your games at 8:15 instead of 8:45, stuff like that. But if they were doing that, they wouldn't be getting the deals they're getting. They'd be getting slightly better deals. And I don't have a lot of faith in their negotiating skills. There's no DirecTV. Every contract looks terrible from where I'm sitting. And we don't talk about this a lot, guys, but I'm an attorney who writes and drafts and negotiates contracts for a living. So I have a some level of knowledge of what I'm talking about here, and it's not impressive. I have the professional lack of enthusiasm for what the Pac-12 is doing on the contract front.
I guess, you know, before we dig into this again, like
we could go for hours on this. It's very frustrating.
I will say this. They signed their deal with ESPN and Fox and everyone in 2011. It's a 12-year deal, so they're still in it until 2023. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, we're kind of stuck with this for a while.
And you see this in everything. The person who signed the oldest deal has the worst deal until they sign a new one. Like, you know, you'll have a quarterback signs a deal in 2015. Even though he's better than the guy who signs the deal in 2018, he's still not getting paid as much because he signed the deal in 2015. But so he shouldn't do a 12-year deal, but that's another.
That's a whole other thing. Yeah. But so let's talk a little football.
Football!
I saw a fun tweet. I mean, we can't get too much into football, and I know recruiting's, you can only talk about recruiting so much. So whether you want to dig into it, we can. But I thought it was fun. Devontae Henry called tweeted out that there should be a 3-back rotation. And I'm just wondering, how would you work that? Because, like, personally, I was like, well, let's run some option. Let's pull the Navy playbook, put Tyler at quarterback, put, you know, Devontae Henry, Cole, and, and, like, Zach Moss at the, the two wing positions.
Pac-12. All of our...
Yeah. No, I'm blanking out on the other name. Who's our early...
Shine?
Yes. Amon Shine down in the backfield. And there's three running backs, and that is just... I would hate to face that offense. And if you do a special package, I think that'd be pretty fun.
The trouble with the special packages is you have to put them on the field. And once you put them on the field, everybody knows what you're going to do. You're going to run this play or this play or this play, and they can defend
won't be able to stop it.
Well,
yeah, they're going to run it over. Execute it every time because we don't have enough time to practice it over and again.
True.
But so I think that there is room, and you do see in the Troy Taylor offense three running backs on the field because you can line up a 2-back set, which he does use, and then a running back out wide use motion to make that uncertain. But I think you won't see DHC in those sets. You're going to see one of these flex hybrid fullback tight end types that Troy Taylor has been incorporating more and more in a fullback role, and then Zach Moss out wide and Shine and the kind of a power back role in the back. He puts Zach Moss out wide all the time. He doesn't put Shine out wide, or didn't preseason before he got injured. And I thought that was interesting because Zach Moss, not the quickest guy, not the best route runner to my eye, but really good hands. And
here's my thing. One, the stuff on Shine's just too small of a sample size to make that decision.
And things are changing as the offense gets more plugged in.
I also think Troy Taylor's job is to get the best playmakers on the field. And if those three running backs are the best playmakers, they need to be on the field. And it's his job to get them there. And we're losing our top two wide receivers. And I know Covey's coming back. And there's some reason to be excited about the wide receiving core overall. But if they're the top three playmakers, they need to be on the field with Tyler Huntley, who we already know is the number one playmaker because he's always touching the ball.
I don't think they are. I think that Bronson Boyd and Britton Covey and the wide receivers who made more of an impact last year, and then Tyler Huntley, of course, you can't take him off the field.
Oh, no, you're not.
And then so you run into just not having enough spots, and Henry Cole, statistically, anyway, hasn't really stood out as a playmaker to me. I know people are really excited about him, and I agree he's got a talent set that's very exciting, but there's still a lot to prove there. Whereas with Moss, we know how good he is, and then with Shine, you need to see what he's like and, you know, how healthy he is. He's the fastest running back. He kind of got lost because Joe Williams was so fast. He made Shine look slow when he was out on the field. But he's a very, very fast back. And I think DHE is going to be struggling for time unless there are injuries at running back. I've never been quite as high on him as other players. I like him. I think he's a good player and he can make a contribution. But I don't see him as the game-breaking player a lot of fans do.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Fun conversation nonetheless. So, apparently there was a basketball game last night.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yes, ASU. Drop it.
Got him.
I'm worried.
Got him.
I'm worried about how much they're dropping because they've lost I think they have a losing record in the Pac-12 right now.
But they beat Xavier and somebody else in the off, somebody good in the off, Kentucky, maybe? Grant's looking it up.
Right. Hold that thought.
He's looking it up. But anyway, they went 15-0 during the preseason, the out-of-conference season, and got a couple of really good wins. But they're, what, 5-4, 4-5 in conference right now?
They beat Xavier.
So they beat Xavier, and then they beat somebody else.
Kansas.
I mean, those are not easy teams to beat, even though when you look at them on the court, not the field, the court, they don't look that special. They don't, you know, you're not like, oh, that guy is unstoppable, which you usually get with a really good team. And they don't have that guy. And I think that's maybe what you're seeing as they kind of fall back to earth and there isn't somebody who you can't plan for, who you can't deal with. I mean, you're watching Arizona, who continues to win games at a high rate, and that Ayton kid, you can't stop him. You have to let him do what he's going to do and try and slow him down, but he's just too special to stop. And ASU doesn't really have that guy. They've got good players. Tra Holder is good and deserves the credit that he's getting, but he's been a little bit cold lately in the shooting department. What did he do? Looks like 7 of 16.
Yeah.
And then 2 of 8 from 3, which is a big deal.
But he still had 23 points. And it's because he got to the line 7 times. I mean, this is the thing. Arizona State's intriguing to me because they are dependent upon guard play. And guard play is a big deal in the tournament. And so I think that's why they still held on to the top 25 ranking. They're going to lose it this week, probably. But we'll see. We'll see what they do against Colorado. I'm really, really intrigued to see how the Utes do against Arizona. Especially, you know, Jace Johnson delivered some minutes.
That was my question. Is it going to be Jace Johnson starting or Coletta?
No. Coletta start. Jace Johnson will continue to come off the bench. But if he plays like he did against Arizona State on a regular basis, like, there's some really exciting things. Because then all of a sudden you got Bibbins, who's been fantastic, Pac-12 Player of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Bearfield, who hopefully in the six-man role.
Yeah.
If he does well in this six-man role, which I think could be a really good fit for him, that could be a game-changer for him. And then you add Tillman and Silly and all these other players and see how they do. Like, we're healthy. Let's see what happens. But I feel like Jace Johnson just stands out to me. Had 15 points, had 3 blocks, and 6 rebounds last night.
He was all over the field.
I mean, that's great play. That tells me, you know, he's going through his sophomore season, and it's starting to click. And hopefully it clicks this year, and this would be great. I mean, look, they're going against Arizona. They're going against a top 5 pick in the NBA draft this coming year in Aiken.
Top 2.
And
he's really good.
We'll see. But either way, I'm excited about the Arizona game on Saturday now. Normally, I don't know that I would have been excited to watch it, but
I still won't say I'm
excited.
I mean, you know, it's sports, and I like sports, and I like you, so I'm excited. But
you know, I'm a basketball guy.
But
first,
I
want
to see what Jace Johnson can do up against Ayton. Not because I think he's going to do great. He's probably going to get beat because Ayton beats everybody, but because Colette looks just so outmatched and out of his depth against players like that. And I just want to see if we can get more out of somebody else. I think Collette's your better player overall. I think he's your better starter. And I think if you're going up against a team with average or below average bigs, you definitely want to start Collette because he's got the technique and all the skills down that he needs and all the kind of experience in the program that he needs. And Johnson doesn't have those things, but he's more talented, more instinctual, and more physically capable of measuring up to a guy like that.
Here's the thing. Collette dropped almost 20 on Arizona last time.
He just looked bad. He didn't play bad.
Well, here's
he
the
just
problem.
Looked bad.
He just... I don't know that he looked bad against Arizona either. I mean, the tough part of looking at his game log against Arizona last time is he only had one rebound.
That's what it was. That's what...
That's the
disappointing
thing.
When you were watching the game, you just felt like he was never contested, physically able to be present in the paint and present at the rim because this other guy was just bigger and stronger than quicker than he was. And
yeah,
he just
and
couldn't
I just,
get there.
I don't think Jace Johnson changes the game in the way I think you're looking. And that's why I'm not gonna bash against Collette. Like he's been playing pretty well. Let me take that back. He's only scored 4 points in the last two games. But he's also had 6 rebounds, but he's been averaging that most of the season. So, I mean, based on the roller coaster that is Collette's game, this Arizona game is going to be big.
Yes, yes. I'm hoping for a lot from Collette,
we'll
but not optimistic.
All right, will you be optimistic? I'll be meh. Either way, I'm excited to watch the game. The Utes are healthy. We have some very good guards. Hopefully, Bearfield continues to have this rhythm he established in the second half, and we'll have a good game to watch on Saturday. Otherwise, guys, we've been telling you about algorithms and how important it is for you guys to review the show. So if you have, if you can give us a positive review, hit iTunes, hit Google Podcast, hit Stitcher, go give us a review. It'll help us a lot. And if you have any feedback, by all means, email us at UteTalk, or not at UteTalk, but UteTalk@gmail.com, and then on Twitter at UteTalk Podcast. Otherwise, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to UteTalk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter at UteTalk Podcast or email at UteTalk@gmail.com.